Most perfect is the love our restoring those that stray. His testimony is most sure, proclaiming wisdom's way. The precepts of Yah right with joy they fill the heart. Yah's commandments all are pure and clear as light impart. The fear of hell is undefiled and ever shall endure. The statutes of Yah are truth and righteousness most pure. The words which from my mouth proceed, the thoughts within my heart, except, O Yah, for thou my rock and my redeemer art.
Happy Sabbath, brethren. We're so thankful that we're here today together to worship Elohim. We thank Him for everything that was done, for the prayers that was offered, for the songs, for the scripture readings, for the words of encouragement. We thank Elohim that we gather like this to praise Him and to edify each other. To edify each other. We're not here to judge or tear down each other, but rather we're here to sharpen each other and encourage each other. Today we will proceed with the book of Acts. Last Sabbath we ended with in Acts chapter 19 of, specifically in verse 20. That's where we left off. And, Yes, and then we saw a few things that took up quite a bit of our time, though. We read about in verses 11, from 11 to 12, about the unusual miracles that Paul did. We read about how the name of Yeshua, the name of our Savior and King, can only be properly utilized by true authorized believers, not just anyone. Great problems can occur when people take it upon themselves to call upon his name in vain, right? We also saw how through the work of the apostles Paul, Apollos, that all the people in Asia came to faith. They came, well, not necessarily came to faith. Let me be clear. What they all heard the word, because the goal of our preaching is to be a witness, Messiah Yeshua says. And as we're a witness, two things can happen. People can turn to be saved, or people can condemn themselves, unfortunately, right? So those two things. But our job is to make sure we are faithful. We present the word faithfully, as the apostles and early elders did. So that's where we left off in verse 20. Now, where it says the word, just something I did not do last Sabbath that I should have done, where it speaks of, and the word grew, right? So in Acts chapter 19, it says, so the word of Elohim grew and prevailed in Asia, right? And this is the same occurrence as we stated that happened in Acts among the Jews in Jerusalem. The word prevailed in Jerusalem as well. It grew, according to Acts chapter 12, verse 24. And Acts chapter 12, yes, verses 24, and Acts chapter 19, verses 20. So the word grew and prevailed. So the Greek word, the used for the word for the text word is logos, G3056, logos or logos. So that's the term that was translated as word, logos. And the word logos is from the root word lego, that's G3004, which with various shades of meaning to relate thought in words systematically and orderly. So the word logos itself points to what is said or a subject of orderly speech. So in Acts 19, in Acts chapter 19 and Acts chapter 12, the term, the word grew means that the well-organized teachings of Yeshua presented to the people spread unhindered in Asia. So the word of Yeshua prevailed, as stated in Acts 19:20. So that is a powerful statement, and it prevailed. So in Acts chapter 12, we know Herod was proud and he did not give honor to Elohim when the people heard him and ascribed to him title of of deity, that his voice was, his oration was that of a deity. He did not give the glory to Elohim, so he was stricken so that he died miserably, right? So there the word of Elohim prevailed. So it's not just spreading, but it's actually conquering evil. So also in Acts chapter 20, when we read, Acts chapter 19, when we read, we remember, and I think in chapter 18, Yeshua told Paul not to be afraid, but to speak, for he had many people there, right? And Paul did just that. And whatever opposition came up failed. If you remember, there was no opposition that came against them that succeeded. And so we see in verses 18 to 19 that of chapter 19 that the people were so convicted, they repented, they many believed and confessed and showed their deeds. So they did not just privately repent in their hearts. They confessed their sins and they showed, they explained, they made sure people understood what it was, the evil, the nature of the evil they were doing. They were so convinced by the Spirit. They repented so much that they took everything they had concerning those things, the books, and they burnt them. So here in that, that's another example of how the word of Elohim prevailed. So with Herod, he shut Herod down in Acts chapter 12. Here in Acts chapter 19, it was really destroying witchcraft and the occult. All these people burnt all these books and burnt them. And that's a big thing, because today we think of just taking, okay, yeah, you may like a book and you take it and you burn it, but it's more than that. Books were hard to come by. Books were hard to produce. You know, they did not have computers or printing presses, or let alone computers to do those things. You know, so books were hard. For them to do that was a big, really a big sacrifice. And it was so noted that that the scriptures even gave us the value of the books. The price of them was found to be 50,000 pieces of silver. Okay? What's the dollar value of that? I don't know, but I'm pretty sure it's about that or more today in terms of dollars. It'll be a lot of monies of that was used to buy those books, and they're all destroyed because the word of Elohim prevailed. So we must make sure somehow that we're doing all we can for the word of Elohim to prevail in what we're doing. So what, like somewhere Paul says, I don't fight, so to say, as if he is boxing in the air, but he makes sure that everything he does counts. And that's what we need to do. We must really, and we will do it. Because I see more and more Elohim is giving us the understanding of unity. Because when we unite, when we don't take it upon ourselves to do things, you know, as if we were an island, but understand that we are a unit. And Elohim, that's how he wants us to work. His spirit wants to work from one person to another, to another, to another, creating a spiritual synergy, as I like to call it. And his power will make us prevail. Just the sheer number of our numbers itself in the sight of the people, just the very act of our unity will cause those who don't believe to take note. Because as far as the world is concerned, we are a washed out religion, as they would say. One person wrote to me in anger, oh, your religion will cease to exist in a few years. It's a matter of time. But we know we've heard that before, right? Just look at history, how many people thought that, and they're all gone, and the faith is still here. We thank Elohim for that. But we need to be strong. We need to act. And with faith, that means right understanding that leads to trust. We have to not just do things, you know, just the way we think and just lean to our own understanding. Whenever we're going to do something, especially if we know it's going to impact others, we have to look at the scriptures carefully to see what it is we need to do and make sure we do it according to the scriptures. So that's what I needed to follow up on Acts chapter 19 up to verse 20. So now let's continue with verse 21 and on. I'm hoping we could finish chapter 20 today, but I'm not sure. We will see. So let's read chapter 19. Let's read from verse 21 and see what makes sense to stop. So let's do that. So verse 21, after these things were ended, Paul purposed in the Spirit when he had passed through Macedonia and Achaia to go to Jerusalem, saying, after I have been there, I must also see Rome. So he sent into Macedonia two of them that ministered unto him, Timotheus and Erastus, but he himself stayed in Asia for a season. And at the same time, there arose no small stir about that way. For a certain man named Demetrius, a silversmith, which made silver shrines for Diana, brought no small gain unto the craftsmen, whom he called together with the workmen of like occupation, and said, sirs, you know that by this craft we have our wealth. Moreover, you see and hear that not alone in Ephesus, but also throughout all Asia, this Paul hath persuaded and turned away much people, saying that they be no gods that are made with hands. So that not only is our craft is in danger, not only this our craft is in danger to be set at nothing, but also that the temple of the great goddess Diana should be despised, and her magnificence should be destroyed from all Asia and the world worships. Verse 28. And when they heard these things, they were full of wrath and cried out, saying, great is Diana of the Ephesians. And the whole city was filled with confusion. And having caught Gaius and Aristarchus, men of Macedonia, Paul's companions in travel, they rushed with one accord into the theater. And when Paul would have entered in unto the people, the disciples suffered him not. And certain of the chief of Asia, which were his friends, sent unto him, desiring him that he would not adventure himself into the city, into the theaters, pardon. Verse 32, some therefore cried one thing and some another, for the assembly was confused, and the more part knew not wherefore they were come together. And they drew Alexander out of the multitude, the Jews putting him forward, and Alexander beckoned with the hand, and would have made his defense unto the people. But when they knew that he was a Jew, all with one voice, about the space of 2 hours, cried out, great is Diana of the Ephesians. And when the town clerk had appeased the people, he said, ye men of Ephesus, what man is there that knoweth not how the city of the Ephesians is a worshiper of the great goddess Diana, and of the image which fell down from Jupiter? Seeing then that these things cannot be spoken against, ye ought to be quiet, and do nothing rashly. For ye have brought hither these men, which are neither robbers of churches, nor yet blasphemers of your goddess. Wherefore if Demetrius and the craftsmen which are with him have a matter against any man, the law is open, and there are deputies. Let them plead one another. But if ye inquire anything concerning other matters, it shall be determined in a lawful assembly. For we are in danger to be called in question for this day's uproar. Therefore, there being no cause whereby we may give an account of this concourse. And when he had thus spoken, he dismissed the assembly. Thank you. So, okay. Let's continue. Let's look at this a little bit. So there's a lot said, but it's basically about three situations here, three things we're going to look at, but they're all important, of course, you can see. But the first one is, it says, Paul purposed in the Spirit, to go to Jerusalem. So, when I read this some years ago, and even now, I it always comes to my mind quickly. What does this mean? Paul purposed in the Spirit. Does it mean that it is the Spirit of Elohim that made him decide to do this, or is it his own decision? Okay. So if Paulos Tithene en Piuma, not a very great Greek speaker, but that's how it's, that those are the words. Paul, Tithene, purpose, un, about, mighty, within, or in, ho, the Piuma, spirit. Okay, so the word purpose here is the word tithemi, as I said. That's Greek word G5087. And, of course, these words have a variety of meaning, various shades of meaning. It could be advise, appoint, bow, commit, conceive, and other possibilities. So all together in context, that's how you will figure out, you know, what's a reasonable word that could be used in English or another language to show this word tithemi. Again, Greek 5087. And the next word is un. This is G1722. This is about, mightily, and within. So, or in. Okay, again, many shades of meaning. And ho, which is the. And then the word here is pioma, Greek 4151, which means breath, a rational soul, or mental disposition, or a spirit. So which is it? We can only know by context of the account to know what's going on. So those are the words there. So we will see as we read on what was Paul driven by the Spirit of Elohim, or was it his own disposition? Some people say it was his own disposition, his own choice, and others lean towards that, no, this is by the Spirit of Elohim. Even the word, actually, tithemi is from the word theo. It's not the word theos, but there's a similar word that sounds like theos that would suggest putting that along together with the word purpose and the word pneuma here, the breath, that it for me, I would lend to think that it is the Spirit of Elohim that is guiding Paul in this. Because Paul is well trained by the Spirit, as we have seen. He makes right decisions, not necessarily where the Spirit needs to tell him immediately, because he's trained. We need to be trained, right? Just like before, long time ago, people had to learn the law and be constrained as bit and brittle by the law, right? Now the Spirit teaches us, puts the law in our spirits, in our minds, so that we know what to do. And over time, we are to be trained in that so that we can make right decisions on our own. Okay? So my belief in this, and you don't have to agree, is that here Paul, where it says he purposed in his spirit to go to Jerusalem, that is by his trained mind in righteousness to do this. And he was making a righteous decision, not an impulsive one. So verse 22, so what did he do? In 22, did he act alone? Did Paul think? Did Paul suggest or think or behave like, you know, he was in charge and he does everything? No. He worked together, hand in hand. So he sent into Macedonia two of those who ministered with him, who served with him, Timothy and Erastus, or who assisted him in what he did. He did not work alone. So he sent them into Macedonia to go to Jerusalem. So he sent to Macedonia, he sent Timothy and Erastus to Macedonia, but he stayed behind in Asia for a time, for a season. And we know, and we've seen over and over, wherever Paul is, he is what? Busy about the eternal business. He's not just idle. He's busy. And he works strategically. So he knew something needed to be done in Macedonia. He sent Timothy and Erastus ahead of him, and he stayed, lingered a little bit in Asia. Wow. Isn't that amazing? He stayed behind in Asia, but he sent them, Timothy and Erastus, away. Look at what verse 23 says. And about that time, there what happened? There was a commotion, a stir about that way of life, about the faith in through of Yeshua. There was a commotion. This Demetrius, who was a smith, a silversmith, who that was his craft, his skill. He made silver shrines of Diana. So he did that. But it says it brought no small profit to the craftsmen. So he had workers with him that profited from this as well. So he was an employer. Demetrius employed people to make silver shrines. And he called them together. Boy, look at that. Just like our Savior said, the unrighteous are wiser than the sons of the kingdom at times. And this is an example. See, Demetrius saw a problem. What did he do? He immediately called all who were involved. They know to unite. Satan knows to unite. But the people of Elohim are just playing games, which is sad. But so you see here, so he called them together with the workers of similar occupation. Wow. Do you notice that? So he calls those that are of the exact trade, but he gets all who are of similar occupation. And then he appeals to their desires. He appeals to their needs, to their hierarchy of needs, so to say. He said, you know, this is how we earn our living, our wealth. And then this is how we earn our wealth. But then there's this Paul who is telling everyone that these things that we're making, these images of Diana, they're these things made of, matter of fact, Paul did not even address any specific deity. We know that through the scriptures. But he said, things that are made with hands are not Elohim. So this maker and these worshippers of Diana, this Demetrius stirred up wrath, as you saw, and he said, oh, Paul is bringing our trade, is endangering our trade and discrediting the reputation of our trade. This is happening throughout all Asia, he is saying. And also, he's appealing to their religious bent, that the great, Diana will be despised and her magnificence destroyed. So he is appealing to their wealth, to their need, and he's appealing to their religious, to their sense of greater purpose. He's saying Paul's teachings is endangering their wealth and their sense of a greater purpose. These are some of the biggest things a person can attack. And what happens when this happens? People will become upset. Whenever the teaching of the truth touches on things that people hold dear, really dear, there will be pushback. And that's what's happening here. So he appealed to their physical needs and to their sense of what their as the greater purpose. And what happened? And when they heard this, the crowd cried out, saying, you know what he said, I don't even want to repeat it, even though it's in the scriptures, verse 28, right? Great is Diana. So the whole city was filled with confusion. It became a mob situation here. And they rushed into the theater with one accord. And having seized Gaius and Aristarchus, Macedonians, Paul's travel companions. So they rushed. They knew who they were. Now, it wasn't Paul there. Paul wasn't there. But Paul was the speaker. But these are his companions. Let's get them. So they seize Gaius and Aristarchus. Let me just say a little bit about Gaius. I don't know too much about Gaius, but you see his name will appear in the New Testament scriptures a little bit. There's an account of how Paul and Peter died. They were, I believe it was before Nero, and they were resisting Simon Magnus, and this was an account given according to the ancient text by Gaius. Okay, so, and he basically told how through prayer and their faith they overcame Simon Magnus, which fell and died, and then for that reason, the emperor, I believe it was Nero at that time, decided to have both Paul and Peter put to death at different times. Okay, so that's Gaius. So there's much, and this is why I'm saying, brethren, we need to immerse ourselves. We need to familiar ourselves with the new covenant teachings, new covenant time teachings. Now, I'm not saying just the Bible. Yes, there's the Bible, but there's new covenant time teachings of reliable sources. Okay? The new covenant congregation really settled within the second century. In other words, it was at its prime. What we're reading here in the Gospels and in the book and in the epistles are the faith being established. But it was fully established within the second century. Just as the Torah was given through Moses, but it went through many years, ups and downs, before it was finally established during the dynasty, early dynasty, beginning with David and his early dynasty, or really within David and Solomon. That's when it was settled. You see, there when you read in the books of Chronicles and so on, you see how David established certain things that Moses did not. He established the singers. He established the psalms. He established the order of service. He established so many things. So, but yes, the law was given through Moses. That system of the old covenant system was fully established many years later in David. So likewise, the New Testament covenant was initiated and given by Messiah, as we see in the Gospels, and it was spread and laid, the foundations were set by the apostles. But as they say, watch how you build. Whatever you build will be tested with fire. So it was finally well established within the second century. But after the third, by the coming of the third century was when all the stuff, the nonsense, started to really come in. So this is why I always say to people, read up to the second century teachings. Don't listen to what others say about them. I used to do the same thing, and I used to just reject them until I read them or listened to them in audio myself. You will be so blessed to listen to Irenaeus. You know, everything he said is fine. The only thing I can raise a question is his view about the Sabbath. But when you understand his view about that, I know I'm digressing, I will come back here. But when you understand Irenaeus' view about the Sabbath, you understand he's saying there's no need for people to question us about keeping the Sabbath, because we are about righteousness, doing good every day. And when you see his train of thought before, how what he was saying was that we as believers, new covenant believers, keep the law above and beyond the requirements of the law as Yeshua requires. So not only do we keep Sabbath, we do more than that. That's his idea, but people perverted his teachings and made it as if he was saying there was no Sabbath. That's why it's important to read it yourself. And even Tertullian, about the Trinity, where the Trinity was, people just distorted what Tertullian said and made it into what it's not. But so going back to here, and Gaius is one of these leaders. And I don't know if that account of Gaius is authentic or not, but in other words, there are writings that are attributed to Gaius that you can find that are very insightful. So they took Gaius and Aristarchus, Paul's companions. And now Paul stayed. Remember what Paul did. Paul stayed behind. Do you see, again, like I mentioned, the orchestration of the Spirit? He knew he had to go to Macedonia. When he had passed through Macedonia and Achaia, he was going to Jerusalem. And you know how fervently he wanted to go to Jerusalem. But he stayed behind. But he sent Timothy and Erastus, but stated that he is going to help with this situation. The Spirit kept the apostle there. So verse 30 tells us when Paul wanted to go into the people, the disciples would not allow him. They pleaded with him not to. And but it was a mob situation. Some said one thing, and some said something else. Confusion. And most of them did not even know why they were come together. How many times have we seen that? That's why in the law it says you shall not follow after a mob. Because a mob situation, people are gathered for base reasons, not for good reasons. They're gathered together for evil purposes. Not indicting a good matter, not a good matter, not for a good cause. They don't even know why they're here. Remember, was it just past week? Something about a YouTuber or whatever and offered some gift. And what happened? Mob situation sadly broke out. It was terrible, right? So let's continue. So they drew Alexander out of the multitude. The Jews putting him forward. I don't have the details about that. I don't know if these Jews were just yielding him in the way Samson's companions handed Samson over to the Philistines. I'm not sure what's going on, but it says Alexander motioned with his hand and wants to make his defense to the people. Verse 34, but when they found out that he was a Yehudi, they shouted above him. They did not want him to speak for over 2 hours. For about 2 hours, great is so-and-so of the Ephesians. So the town clerk, so this is not the, this is not like the other gentleman, Gallio. This is not like Gallio, who was a proconsul who dealt with high matters. He was the town clerk. Okay, he was a man of authority, but not that level. But he reasoned with them. He basically told them, look, he appealed to them by saying, look, we all know about this Diana. We all know about Diana. There's no reason for this uproar. We know nothing can be said against it. So, you know, appealing to there. So don't do anything rashly, because obviously they wanted to kill whoever they could kill. They wanted to kill Gaius. They wanted to kill Erastus. And if they could grab Paul, they would kill him. And they wanted to kill Alexander too. So he quieted them down. Don't do anything rational. Rashly. I'm sorry. We need to be rational. Don't do anything rashly. These men, now, and he's being very specific about law and order. These men are not robbers of temples nor blasphemers of your goddess. So he's being very rational. They hired a good man for this. So he calmed them. He says, they're not robbers of your, they're doing nothing against you. For you brought these men that are not robbers of temples, nor have they blasphemed your name. And that's to show we need to be careful how we preach. Okay, if you notice, not once did Yeshua ever speak against a particular deity. He just told the truth. Not once did you see Paul or any of the apostles speak against any particular deity. They just told the truth. In other words, we talked about how the word prevailed. We need to work that way. We don't need to draw unnecessary attention to ourselves. We don't need to provoke violence unnecessarily against ourselves. When we start talking about other people's religions and beliefs in a derogatory way, we were pointing the finger, identifying, then we're drawing unnecessary attention to ourselves. What we need to do is just preach the truth about what is. And then what is not, if the shoe fits, it fits, right? But we're not supposed to go and attack and be contentious and be seen as belligerent And that a lot is going on today. In many, many fronts of what's supposed to be Christianity or the Messianic or Nazarene faith. We're not to do that. Because you don't see any of the apostles do that. They just told the truth. As a matter of fact, as we saw a few chapters back, when Paul was at the Areopolis or Mars Hill, Areopagopolis, however it's pronounced, I don't have it in front of me, he did not speak against any of these things. He did not walk around as if he's on eggshells. Oh, he's so holy, he can't do this. These things are nothing. Rather, he looked for opportunities to what? Build up opportunities to connect with the pagans. These were pagans. He was not at Mars Hill. He was not insulting them. He was not looking down at them in any way. He did not tear them down in any way, but rather in wisdom and in genuine kindness, he looked for opportunities to connect with them. Because they're human beings, brethren, pagan or not. Because all of us in the fallen state still have the propensity for what? Good or evil. So Paul's work was to draw their propensity to more the good. The good. Until the good by the Spirit of Elohim overcomes the evil. That's how we are to deal with people. That's how we are to present the gospel, not tear them down. And this was evident to this clerk. So therefore, if Demetrius and his fellow craftsmen have a case against anyone, the courts are open. Go to the courts. Let this be done in a legal, just manner. Let them bring charges against each other. Against one another. He didn't say let Demetrius accuse them and let them have no say. No, let them bring their case. Let them defend themselves before the courts. Legally. Justly. But if you have any other inquiry to make, it shall be determined in a lawful assembly. I didn't check the word assembly here. It might be synagogue. I'm not sure what that word is. In the future, I'll look it up. So lastly, the end in 41. For we are in danger of being called in question for today's uproar. The higher authority of Rome would not stand for this nonsense that was going on there. Okay? They were a just society. Were they perfect? Far from it. Far from it. But they had a sense of justice. And this is why in the scriptures you will see that from time to time you see what it says, the Gentiles have acquired certain things that the Yehudim did not acquire through the law. Because the law was to them bit and bridle, just control them. Very few of them allowed it to do what it was supposed to do. Those in whom the law did what it was supposed to do believed in Yeshua. But a great deal of them did not. Because it was just as bit and bridle, do it or die. That's how a lot of, and that's what is the administration of death, as we mentioned a few months ago. Do it or die. But the Romans and others, they learned this by knowledge. They learned it by observation. They believed in what they were doing. They believed there was a need for justice and mercy, and that's why Rome went forth and tried to spread Pax Romana. Remember, all authorities, all governments are from whom? Elohim. Okay? So here, without saying, we got to end. So we see here that the Romans had a system of order. Now, did we see any of this reflected throughout the Old Testament very much? Not very much. Really, not very much. Not just in the New Testament. Look back. Look at how the prophets were treated. Okay, look, the authorities there, it's either you do what we say or you die. That's how it was. There was no really allowance for one to bring charges against each other so much, very much. And by the time it got to the New Testament, it was New Testament times in Yeshua, then it was corrupt. Look at Herod. John the Baptist put to death on the whim of his, what, stepdaughter? Stepdaughter's wish. Stephen stoned to death, and so many, many, you know, and of course our wonderful Messiah. When he tried, he just said an innocent word and they struck him on the face. And you will see a similar thing done to Paul when he's in Jerusalem. So this is why we have to understand and follow the works of Elohim and understand what the scriptures are telling us in general, in the macro level, as well as the micro level with the details. Because if we just look at the details, we will get lost and not understand. We have to take a step back and look at the big picture about what's going on. Then we'll understand when Paul speaks plainly, when the New Testament speaks, how the Gentiles have achieved certain things. Because what is Elohim about? Foremost is justice and mercy. Look through the scriptures, you will see that. Justice and mercy. Justice and mercy. And the nations, by this time, had way surpassed Jerusalem in that context. We have to really understand that. So, brethren, I stop here. So, just a quick recap. So, we saw briefly how Paul, in his trained mind by the Spirit, purposed to go to Jerusalem, but the Spirit caused him to stay, to send his companions Erastus and Timothy ahead of him, but he stayed behind. And staying behind, while he decided to make that, the same time there was an uproar about people making accusations of how the preaching of the gospel through Paul is affecting their craft, their wealth, and their greater sense of belonging, this image that they worship. And so they brought accusations, imaginary accusations. You'd think any of this was happening, right? If you read, none of it was happening. But thanks to Elohim, this clerk had a sense of justice, and he basically said, nothing's going on here. These men have done nothing wrong. If you have an issue, take it to the courts and bring your case to the courts. Okay, and he says, so we are in danger of being called in question for today's uproar, because the Roman authority, the proconsul, and the one to whom the proconsul answers to in Rome does not accept this type of nonsense. So we end here, brethren, and we thank Elohim. I'm hoping this has stimulated your thinking, and I'm looking forward to any comments or observations you may have. Thank you, dear brethren, for listening.